In this episode of the Leadersmith podcast, I want to talk about a tale of two theories. One of these theories will prevail, and it will change the course of history. Stay tuned.
In a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants, one management professor claims that he can help you become the kind of leader that you would want to follow. You are listening to The Leadersmith. Now, here is your host, Darren Gurdis.
Okay, so in church on Sunday, I was listening to the sermon, and I was very convicted by 2 Timothy 2:23 to 24. And I even posted this meme on my Facebook page, said 2 Timothy 2:23 to 24, I will do better in the future. And what I was talking about was this, I get caught up in what's going on in the news, and I'm paying attention to things that are going on. And I'm just thinking, how could we be doing this or that stupid thing? And the verse says this, but reject foolish and ignorant speculation, for you know that it breeds quarreling. And I, you know, guilty as charged, I'm prone to getting into that quarreling. And the servant of the Lord must not be quarrelsome, but must be kind to everyone, able to teach, and forbearing. And so I will try to do better. But, you know, I've been wrestling with this for some time of, you know, what's going on in society. And I think I understand a little bit about what's going on here. There's really two different approaches to how we're engaging with what's happening in society. The first is critical theory, and the second is appreciative inquiry. And I thought about this a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, yeah, you know, there's really something to that. Now, if you don't know the backgrounds of them, I'm going to give you a brief overview of each. And based on one synopsis of critical theory and one a synopsis of appreciative inquiry. And, you know, if you look around at what's going on and what's motivating people to defund the police and tear down the system and that kind of thing. Well, critical theory is part of the underlying structure that's causing a lot of what we're seeing right now. And so here is a article, and I'll post the article below on understanding critical theory. And it is, this is from thoughtco.com. So this is just a synopsis of critical theory. And so I'm going to give you some highlights of it. So critical theory, quote, critical theory is a social theory oriented toward critiquing and changing society as a whole. Skip down to the next paragraph. Critical theory emerged out of the Marxist tradition, so it's Marxist in base. So just understand that anything that comes out of critical theory is going to have that kind of oppressed kind of dialogue, and it comes from the Frankfurt School. Okay, a little bit of history and overview. Quote, critical theory, as it is known today, can be traced to Marx's critiques of the economy and society. It's inspired greatly by Marx's theoretical formulation of the relationship between economic base and ideological superstructure, and focuses on how power and domination operate. Okay, so critical theory is Marxist in origin, but it's not Marxist. And when conservatives point at, you know, what's going on and say, well, that's Marxism, and people say, that's not Marxism. Marxism is about economic means. No, it is in its base, in its assumptions, in its grouping between two different classes. There's a good guys and a bad guys. And so it's not Marxist like Marx, but it has a Marxist feel. Okay, next paragraph. In following in Marx's critical footsteps, and please forgive me if I slaughter this name, Hungarian Gyorgy Lukacs and Italian Antonio Gramsci developed theories that explored cultural and ideological sides of power and denomination. Both of them focus their critique on the social forces that prevent people from understanding how power affects their lives. Okay, and so this is part of the Frankfurt School, and he goes on to talk about the Frankfurt School, the work of the Frankfurt School members, including Horkheimer, Adorno, Fromm, Benjamin, and Habermas, and Marcuse is considered the heart of critical theory. These theorists focused on ideology and cultural forces as facilitators of domination and barriers to freedom. Okay, so what happened was the Nazis come to power. The Frankfurt School are a bunch of Marxists who want to see what happened in Soviet Russia in 1917 come to fruition in Germany. But instead, they get fascism and they go, well, What's going on with that? They tend to be, I think most of them, if not all of them, were Jews. And so they fled from Hitler with good reason, right? And they landed in New York. So the Frankfurt School was transposed to New York. They're trying to understand, why didn't socialism come? Why did we get fascism instead? Well, they're two sides of the same coin, in a sense, in the way that they want to control. Socialism and fascism are both controlling type powers. So that's the basis and the background with critical theory. So they're trying to figure out, how do we get Marxism to really take? And they are scratching their heads because it's not taking in America like they thought that it should. Okay, so the purpose of critical theory. Horkheimer asserted, this is a quote, Horkheimer asserted that critical theory must do two important things. It must account for society within a historical context, and it should seek to offer a robust and holistic critique by incorporating insights from all social sciences. So they start to draw on Freud and others in order to understand and propel this Marxist kind of ideology into society. Horkheimer, this is another quote, Horkheimer condemned traditional theorists for producing works that fail to question power and domination and the status quo. And so they're very interested in issues related to structures of power. And this is why we're talking right now about structural or systemic racism, because they're looking at how power is overlaid in society, rightly or wrongly, through a Marxist lens. And what they're trying to get to is trying to understand how to make a more Marxist-like society. And their intentions are good, but they're starting with that framework. Okay, finally, in the last paragraph, they give a number of key texts here. And then in the last paragraph, they say this: many social scientists and philosophers who rose to prominence after the Frankfurt School have adopted the goals and tenets of critical theory. We can recognize critical theory today in many feminist theories and approaches to conducting social science. It's also found in critical race theory, cultural theory, gender and queer theory. So in all of these, you'll find behind it, underpinning it, you'll find this kind of Marxist understanding from the Frankfurt School in critical theory, which leads to, you know, critical race theory, which is what we're talking about now, or queer theory, or, you know, all these kind of feminist theory, where, again, in feminist theory, men are bad, women are better, and we just need to hear more women and understand their voices. Queer theory, same thing, just use gay and lesbian. Race theory, black voices need to be heard and elevated because they have perspectives that you can't possibly understand because you are white. And so all these things are, this is critical theory. Now, what's going on in society, there's a lot of this tearing down the system, which is what critical theory is designed to do, to tear down the system, to rebuild it in a more Marxist sense. So most of what's going on, when you're seeing like statues being pulled down and other things, that's not to build up, that's to tear down. And that's intentional because it's part and parcel of the theory. And if you understand that, then you're going, oh, well, that makes sense. This is why. And so they don't just stop at a Confederate statue. They then go to Grant, and they then go to even statues of the first African-American regiment in the Civil War, because it was led by Shaw. He's a white guy. This is unfortunately showing the domination of power. And right, so it goes on and on, and it will keep going on and on until you have George Washington and Jefferson and those kind of things. Okay, so critical theory, in sum, is a Marxist ideology designed to tear down the system so it can be rebuilt in the Marxist image. Okay, so let's stop there. Let's turn the corner. Let's talk about a different way that we can do this. We can either tear down or we can build up. If you were trying to fix society, if you're trying to build up society, if you're trying to address what is wrong in such a way that you can capitalize on your strengths and build toward what is right, you would choose a very different tool than critical theory. You would use something more like appreciative inquiry. Now, I recognize that many people don't know what appreciative inquiry is. It's something that's used in business, in organizational change. So AI, I just finished reading a book by David Cooperrider, who is one of the leading voices in appreciative inquiry. And this is a summary. What I'm going to read to you now is little bits of a summary from his page. So what is appreciative inquiry? And I'll put this link below as well. Appreciative inquiry, AI, represents a paradigm shift in the world of sustainable organizational development. a radical departure from a traditional deficit-based change to a positive strength-based change approach. And what he's saying there is simply, we're not going to like do a survey and evaluate what's wrong with you. We're going to say, what's right about us? And how do we get more of what's right about us in order to fix what's wrong? It's the same kind of thing like if you went to a counselor, you know, and, you know, said, well, she's the problem. No, he's the problem, like a marriage counselor. The counselor probably wouldn't say, well, write out all your problems and talk about how bad your problems are. They'd say, no, you know what, let's think about, I understand what your grievances are. What drew you two together to begin with? I mean, what's good about your relationship? Can we build on that? That's kind of what AI is doing, because it's trying to build up. It's not trying to tear down. So AI is revolutionizing, I'm quoting again, AI is revolutionizing the field by providing a proven methodology to successfully address the most important change agendas faced by organizational and societal leaders today. AI focuses on leveraging an organization's positive core strengths to design and redesign the systems within an organization to achieve a more effective and sustainable future. So if you're a critic of what's going on in society, and let's just use race, because if you're looking at what's going on now in society after George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter protesters and things along those lines, and you want to tear it down, you might hear this and say, well, I don't want to just, you know, put my head in the sand and not address what's really going on. That's not what it's asking you to do. Inquiry is doing something very different. It starts with an affirmative topic, okay? And once you start looking at your topic, let's use race in society as our case study, you would say, okay, so what has happened with race in society? And so let me read this first, and then we'll talk more about it. So it says this, the first step in an AI intervention is selecting the affirmative topic choice. Selecting the affirmative topic choice begins with the constructive discovery and narration of the organization's life-giving story. The topics in the initial stages are bold hunches about what gives life to the organization. Most importantly, the topics, usually 3 to 5 for an inquiry, represent what people really want to discover or learn about. The topics will likely evoke conversations about a desired future. So rather than say, hey, there's this injustice here, and there's that injustice here, and there's these crimes here, and these penalties here, and see how the system is stacked against us, and I get pulled over for being black, or whatever. Instead of focusing that way, this would say, well, what's the story of liberty in the United States? So the question isn't what's wrong with America that it had slaves. Slavery has been there throughout all of human history. In fact, it still goes on in some places in the world. What we want to look at in using an affirmative topic is, what's the history of the U.S.? Yes, it started with slaves. They had slavery enshrined in the system from the early days. That's true. There was slavery through the Constitution. The Constitution recognized African Americans only for 3/5 for taxation purposes, and that's sad. But 20 years after this, after they could end the importation of slavery, they ended it by law. I mean, it was protected by the Constitution for 20 years, but then they ended it. And then we fought a civil war largely on the question of slavery, even though, you know, the South will say it's on states' rights. Well, it was on states' rights on the issue of slavery, but it was largely over slavery. And we abolished slavery during the Civil War, and then had multiple amendments to protect then. It didn't work out perfectly, but we're moving the right direction. But then we had Jim Crow laws, and that kind of did, you know, slavery by another means, but we're still improving. And then we abolished Jim Crow laws, and we had integration, and we had the civil rights movement. And there's no better time to be an African American in the U.S. than now compared to where we've been with slavery and Jim Crow. And as we moved and gotten better and better. And the reason that we're getting better is because we pin our hopes on all men are created equal. And even though all men are created equal didn't mean African Americans at that time, if we buy that line, the seed of the destruction of inequality is laid for us there. And we appreciate that, and we want to build on it and grow and create a better future and move toward, and this is what they call a positive core. So let me read this. The positive core of organizational life is one of the greatest yet least recognized resources in the change management field today. AI has demonstrated that human systems grow in the direction of their persistent inquiries. Did you hear that? They grow in the direction of the persistent inquiries. That means what you focus on is what you become. So if you focus on more and more of everything's bad and see how this injustice and that injustice, you kind of focus on that. So everything is race, then everything becomes racialized. As opposed to if you focus on here's what's right and here's how we get to more and more right. Let me continue reading. In the AI process, the future is consciously constructed upon the positive core strengths of the organization. So we start to ask ourselves, well, what brings more and more liberty? What brings more and more equality? What helps us to be in a society where race doesn't change your future, where we can all become what we should be? So that's how appreciative inquiry looks at it. And then we go from the positive core to the discovery phase. Quote, the primary task in the discovery phase is to identify and appreciate what is the best of what is. The distinguishing factor of AI in this phase is that every carefully crafted question on the topic of choice is positive. So we're not trying to tear down, look at that, look at this. No, how do we get to where we want to go? We're looking at a future where everyone is equal, let's say. Okay, and we all want that. Even the people on the other side claim to want that. They want to tear down this system in order to rebuild a system as if they, you know, will necessarily get to be the ones that rebuild it. But they want to rebuild a system so that they have this equality. We're all on the same page about the ends in the sense that we want equality. Okay. So AI, however, focuses almost entirely on that in order to build toward that, to become more like that. Okay, again, quote, the task is accomplished by focusing on peak times of organizational excellence when the people have experienced the organization at its most alive and effective. People deliberately let go of analyses and defects and systematically seek to isolate and learn from even the smallest wins. So we would say in AI, if we were looking at the same events, what have we done right? How have we grown? How have we gotten better? We have gone from slavery to Jim Crow to integration to thinking that the, you know, white supremacy and the Klan and that kind of thing is just a foolish thing to, I mean, most Americans agree about that. We elected a black president. There was no white person that I'm aware of that was saying, yeah, that was really good what Officer Chauvin did to George Floyd. We're in that kind of society. How do we build on that? That is how AI approaches the subject. And then the next step is to dream. Quote, once an organization discovers its positive core, the next step is to imagine and envision its future. The dream phase of the AI 4D cycle accomplishes this step. One aspect that differentiates AI from other visioning or planning methodologies is that images of the future emerge out of grounded examples from its positive past. So let me stop there for a moment. So what it's saying is we have this history, this track record, and it's like there's two dueling histories here. There's the history that we've been taught all along that there's this important thing, then that important thing, then the other. And then there's kind of a critical history, Howard Zinn and others that are looking at all the evils that have happened. And well, Columbus was this bad guy. Well, let's say Columbus was a racist or didn't think the same of Indians that he did Native Americans. Than he did of other peoples. We don't, you know, we're not praising him for that. We laud him properly for being the guy that figured out where this was. From the European perspective, I know it's terrible, but we laud people for what they have done, not because they happen to have a defect somewhere in their character. So we're looking at grounded examples of good things that have happened so that we can build on them. Let me continue. Quote, for many organization stakeholders, this is the first time to think of great thoughts and create great possibilities for their organization. Okay, so that is the dream stage. Now we're going to go on and build on that into the design stage, because let's say racism is the issue. How would we design a system or a society that is going to be able to make it better, get to the ends of equality that we're after? So quote, in the design phase, attention turns to creating the ideal organization in order to achieve its dream. Future images emerge through grounded examples from an organization's positive past. Good news stories are used to craft provocative propositions that bridge the best of what gives life with a collective aspiration of what might be. So again, from slavery to Jim Crow to integration to you know, dispelling the idea of, you know, white racism as a good thing, which was prevalent in much of the country, to electing a black president, to what else can we build on that's going to, I mean, how can we get to a place where there is no actual inequality? What will we have to design? So then we go to destiny. The destiny phase represents both the conclusion and the discovery, dream and design phases, and the beginning of an ongoing creation of an appreciative learning culture. So we create a culture where we're focused on that. How do we get to equality? Not you're bad or this is awful or whatever else. We're not going down that path because we're building up, not tearing down. We're intentionally building up. The destiny phase delivers on the new images of the future and is sustained by nurturing a collective sense of purpose. The momentum and potential for innovation are extremely high by this stage in the process because of the shared positive image of the future. Everyone is invited to align his or her interactions in co-creating the future. We welcome everybody's support. We want everybody's input. We welcome, and so once we're getting on the same page, we can pull the same direction and actually get to that future. That's what we're trying to accomplish in this stage. Okay, so stakeholders are invited to an open space planning and commitment session during this phase. Individuals and groups discuss what they can and will do to contribute to the realization of the organization's dream as articulated in the provocative propositions. Action commitments then serve as the basis for ongoing activities. So we're not putting our head in the sand and just saying, here's what's right, ignore all the problems. We're saying, here's what's right, and this is how we can do better. And that is the goal of equality ongoing. So that's how we're going to achieve our destiny as in being this equal society. It's by thinking about what is positive about the future rather than trying to think about how to tear down and how to destroy. So, you know, I've heard some progressives talking about, say, the criminal justice system and how it disproportionately affects African Americans and things like that. And they say things like this: the purpose of a system is what it does. That's the cybernetic principle. The purpose of a system is what it does. So if there's these disproportionate effects, they're saying, well, then the purpose is it's the system's designed for that. Okay, let's assume that that's the case. We need to remedy whatever the defects are. And I'm not even going to argue with that. Let's just say that that's the case. So what's the purpose of the system that's happening right now? I mean, the protests, the riots, those kinds of things, especially riots when they're tearing down statues and looting buildings and things like that. What's the purpose of that system? Is that justice? Or is the purpose of that system to tear down? And I think the purpose of that system, based on critical theory, is to tear down because you want a new Marxist system. That is very, very different than the purpose of the AI type system to, hey, let's focus on what's right in order to get to where we need to go so that we can actually make the system work for all of us. Okay, so I'm going to leave you with this. Focus on what's right. Focus on what is useful. The scriptures in Philippians 4:8 say, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. And that is good advice. And that's the way that we should be thinking about what we want to do, where we want to be. We want to have a system that is equal and is where everyone has access to it, and we want to think about that system in a way that, you know, how do we get there rather than focus on what tears down? Because, and here's the quotation for contemplation for today, it's from David Kubelrider in his Appreciative Inquiry book, human systems grow in the direction of their deepest and most frequent inquiries. So what does that mean? So if you understand that quote, and you think about it, you grow in the direction of your deepest and most frequent inquiries. If you have a critical theory-based approach, you are going to be going, what's wrong with this system? And where's the injustice here? And where's the racial this and the, you know, right? And that's how you're going to be thinking about it, as opposed to if you take an appreciative inquiry approach and you start thinking, what's good about the system? What can be better? How can we make equality for all? How can we help everybody have access to the society based on where we have been? Because we have shown over time that we have improved and grown and become more and literally fulfilled the promise. And we're continually working on fulfilling that promise of equal justice for all and life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That is our goal. We want that for everyone. So the system, the choice of your system, of your approach is going to matter. This tale of two theories is I can't explain how important it is. If you take that critical theory approach, you're going one direction into tearing the system down. If you take the appreciative inquiry approach, that is the direction to go if you want to build that system up. Hey, listen, thank you for your time and attention here. I know that this was a lot to absorb. Maybe I'll do another entire something about either critical theory or appreciative inquiry later on. But if you appreciated this, let me know. I'm on Twitter at Darren Gerdes, D-A-R-I-N-G-E-R-D-E-S. And I'd love to hear your thoughts. Please subscribe if you like this episode and you want to hear more. I create these daily, and I hope that this helps you become the kind of leader that you want to follow.